Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a truly fascinating question for you. Can cultural investment genuinely revive a city, especially one that's been grappling with some significant long-standing challenges? We're going to uncover some surprising facts, maybe some dramatic turnarounds that might just change how you think about urban renewal. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is how this UK city of culture status, it's really proven itself as a powerful catalyst for change. Our deep dive today will specifically look at Hull's extraordinary experience back in 2017, and crucially, what that might imply for Bradford, you know, as it prepares for its own turn in 2025. Our source material gives us a really detailed, almost a blow-by-blow account of Hull's remarkable journey.
And when you look at Hull's starting point, remarkable feels like, well, maybe an understatement. Before 2017, its reputation was, let's put it mildly, pretty bleak. This was a struggling port city, right? It had endured decades of industrial decline, huge job losses, and just this perpetually tarnished image. It was often, and quite cruelly, derided as a national joke. I mean, get this, a 2003 book actually called Crap Towns.
Oh, I remember that one.
Right. It identified Hull as the worst place to live in the UK, basing that on things like, you know, crime rates, poverty levels, life expectancy, that sort of thing. And if that wasn't enough, The Economist magazine, no less, went so far as to claim Hull was beyond help.
Beyond help.
Yeah, and should simply be abandoned. It almost sounds like a dare, doesn't it?
It does. A dare that Hull met with really remarkable defiance. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it makes Hull's dramatic shift in perception even before 2017 officially began truly astonishing. Think about it. A city once labeled, you know, the crapest town and economically unsalvageable, then suddenly pops up at number 8 on Rough Guide's 2016 list. The top 10 cities to visit in the world.
In the world. Wow.
And Hull was the only UK city on that entire list. And it wasn't just external perception changing. Citizen engagement was already incredibly high. How high? Well, over 3,000 naked volunteers.
3,000.
Yeah. Showed up for that Spencer Tunick photo shoot in July 2016, right in the city center. That's not just participation. That's a powerful, kind of undeniable signal that the city was ready to really get involved, you know, to shed its past.
That level of citizen engagement, I mean, even before the official year, that's truly striking. What was driving that? Was it like a campaign or more organic? You can almost picture the scenes, can't you? Jubilation in Queen Victoria Square back on November 20th, 2013, when Maria Miller, the culture secretary then, announced Hull had beaten Leicester, Dundee, Swansea Bay.
Must have been incredible.
Yeah, a moment of pure, unexpected triumph. It instantly began to rewrite Hull's story. Even David Cameron, prime minister at the time, referenced local figures like Wilberforce, Larkin, the House Martins, expressed real confidence in its success.
And that underlying desire for change was definitely there. And one of the most visible, most immediate transformations in Hull was, as you might expect, in its public spaces, the infrastructure. The City of Culture designation didn't just prompt investment, it really strategically directed it. We're talking a substantial sum, $27.4 million injected right into the city center.
Okay.
Specifically designed to improve streets, squares, public buildings. This wasn't just about, you know, prettying up the city, it was strategic placemaking. Investing in public realm improvements designed to create inviting walkable spaces, spaces that encourage people to linger, maybe spend money, and foster that sense of shared ownership, which is absolutely crucial for long-term revival.
Right, right. And the transformation wasn't just on paper, was it? You could literally see the difference on the streets. Imagine those iconic landmarks like Queen Victoria Square, the marina, the fruit market, once maybe overlooked, now pulsing with new life. The sources describe the once derelict Humber Street area, for example, being rejuvenated into this really vibrant hub, buzzing with galleries, cafes, live gigs. This visible change, as you said, it really did foster a new sense of pride, didn't it? And community among residents. But beyond the physical facelift, the sort of bricks and mortar, what about the cultural fabric itself? Because beyond that, the program really focused on spotlighting Hull's incredible local talent. Yeah. Artists, musicians, performers who maybe struggled for exposure before suddenly had new platforms. Events like Freedom Festival and Made in Hull were fantastic examples, explicitly designed to highlight local stories, local creative expressions. That speaks to something deeper than just attracting big names, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what's crucial here, I think, is how initiatives like the Back to Arts Project really decentralized art and culture. They literally brought events directly into Hull's neighborhoods.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, holding them in community centers, schools, sometimes even people's homes. This approach was vital for encouraging greater participation from Hull's diverse communities, fostering a far more inclusive cultural environment that wasn't just centered in the city core. You know, it's about bringing culture to where people actually live, breaking down those barriers. And this inclusivity, it directly contributed to a pretty significant economic boom. The tangible economic impact of Hull's City of Culture year really can't be overstated. The program attracted over 5.3 million visits.
Wow, 5.3 million.
Yeah, and generated an estimated $300 million for the local economy. Hotels were full, restaurants, bars, shops. They all benefited significantly from that surge in tourism. This clearly demonstrates how targeted cultural investment can act as a really powerful economic multiplier, drawing in tourism, boosting local businesses, and fundamentally shifting a city's economic narrative from, you know, decline to dynamism.
And beyond those impressive financial figures, the sources highlight something else, a truly remarkable aspect of this transformation, one driven entirely by the community itself, the City of Culture volunteers. Hundreds of people mobilized, contributing an astonishing 337,000 hours.
Incredible.
Which is the equivalent of, what, 38 years of full-time work. For many, especially those maybe previously unemployed, this experience provided invaluable new skills, confidence, professional connections. It even led to long-term jobs in cultural and tourism sectors for some.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It shows the power of human capital, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. This wasn't just about free labor. It's a powerful case study in how these cultural programs can be potent vehicles for social mobility and for confidence building. It demonstrates that human capital is just as vital as financial capital in urban regeneration. And perhaps the most profound transformation, really, was in how Hull's residents actually saw themselves and their city. For years, Hull had been known more for its economic challenges, its sort of perceived lack of status. The City of Culture year dramatically changed that narrative. It gave residents this deeply renewed sense of pride. This transformation in self-perception is arguably the deepest impact, proving that cultural initiatives can sort of heal a city's collective psyche, making residents its most passionate advocates.
A great example of that shift was Blade, wasn't it? That 75-meter wind turbine blade displayed right in the city center. It wasn't just a striking sculpture. It was a powerful symbol, a symbol of Hull's burgeoning renewable energy industry and its potential for innovation. It sparked so many conversations about the city's future, its identity. And what's really fascinating here is how that renewed pride seemed to extend to individual well-being, too.
Mm-hmm. And this raises an important question. How does cultural engagement actually connect to well-being? Local mental health organizations in Hull noted a significant improvement, actually, in the emotional and social well-being of residents, specifically due to their participation in creative activities, workshops, community art projects during that year. And it suggests that engaging with culture provides more than just entertainment. It fosters connection, purpose, a sense of belonging, all crucial elements for mental health.
So if we try and summarize Hull's overall success, it raised over £32 million in investment, put on about 3,000 events seen by more than 5 million people, and a University of Hull study showed over half the audiences were from the city itself, with over 95% of residents attending at least one cultural activity.
95%?
Yeah. The picture is pretty clear. Hull's infrastructure was modernized, local artists got a crucial platform, the economy flourished, and citizens found this truly renewed sense of pride. It's an almost unbelievably comprehensive turnaround.
It really is. Now, if we pivot to Bradford 2025, there's definite excitement, sure, but also, as you'd expect, some cynicism, kind of echoing Hull's initial reception, perhaps. Bradford faces its own significant challenges, high rates of poverty, unemployment, income deprivation. Yet it's the hometown of incredible cultural icons, isn't it? J.B. Priestley, Zayn Malik, David Hockney, Dame Judi Dench.
That's quite a list.
It has this rich tapestry of history and really diverse communities.
So what does this all mean for Bradford? That's the big question. Just as Hull transformed from being, you know, economically unsalvageable, Bradford now has this incredible, almost poetic opportunity for rebirth. The sources emphasize a really crucial element for Bradford's success, the attitude of its people, not just being spectators of culture, but active participants. But how does a city with Bradford's specific challenges foster that kind of widespread engagement, that open attitude right from the start, drawing on its unique heritage and diverse population? What specific lessons from Hull's journey do the sources suggest Bradford should maybe prioritize, given its own challenges and cultural heritage?
That's the core question for Bradford, isn't it?
Mm.
Hull's experience shows that early, deep engagement of citizens, like we saw the Spencer Tunick photo shoot, it creates a sense of shared ownership, a belief.
For Bradford, this means not just planning events for people, but really co-creating with its diverse communities, fostering a genuine sense of belonging to the cultural narrative. While Hall had Blade as a symbol of its industrial future, Bradford will need to identify and champion its own unifying cultural assets, perhaps drawing on its literary heritage, its vibrant contemporary art scene, or, I don't know, even its unique culinary landscape. The key is finding those authentic symbols and stories that resonate deeply with the local population, turning potential cynicism into collective enthusiasm. Hull's story is a truly powerful testament, I think, to culture's ability to drive not just urban regeneration, but profound social transformation. It really proves that cultural investment can be the spark for an entire city to rediscover its identity and its potential.
So as you go about your week, maybe consider this. How might active participation in cultural initiatives within your own community, no matter the scale, how might that contribute to local pride, economic vitality, maybe even collective well-being? Think about what cultural vibrancy could truly unlock in the places you know.